This is an ABC podcast.
This is Baby Talk Podcast with Penny Johnston.
Tanya Strasberg never planned on becoming a childbirth educator, but like so many women before her, becoming a mother changed her life completely. Having delivered both her children in Israel following a Lamaze class.
People often then ask me, oh, did you have this incredible birth? And that's pretty subjective. I had a fairly, I wouldn't say difficult birth, but certainly one that it took me in directions I didn't think I would go in. But I think what really, if you like, saved me from having what potentially really could have been quite a difficult and traumatic experience was the fact that we had attended this class.
Tanya then decided to sign on to study childbirth education. It was a massive career and life change. Lamaze is a childbirth method that dates back to 60 years ago and was a real pioneer for reclaiming the experience of birth for women. I want you to imagine childbirth in the 1950s, 60s and 70s was probably pretty different to what we experience now. And it's hard to underestimate how important a movement like Lamaze was for giving women the right to reclaim some of the aspects of childbirth. But Tanya, can you give us a little bit of background on Lamaze, because it's not been commonly practiced here in Australia?
You're right. I think Lamaze is a name that a lot of people are familiar with, but not necessarily know why they're familiar with it. Unfortunately, I think a lot of TV shows and movies have contributed to that, because certainly in the States, it's reasonably synonymous with childbirth education. And essentially, I think Lamaze is really, in some ways, I like to think of it as like the grandmother of all childbirth education. It's been around for a really long time. It actually was established back in 1960, an obstetrician called Fernand Lamaze. And he was working at a time in the sort of in the 50s and the early 60s, birth was certainly moving out of the home and very much into a hospital setting. And it was also a time when there was sort of, you know, I guess very early, quite crude epidurals were being introduced. And it was a period of time where something called twilight sleep was being quite widely used in hospital births.
Women were literally anaesthetized out of labor.
Pretty much. We look back now, and historically speaking, it wasn't that long ago. And yet you look back and you think, oh my goodness, like how did that ever happen? And you're right, women were essentially unconscious for their births, but the drugs that were in twilight sleep actually had some really pretty horrific side effects, so much so that they often had to have women held down on the birthing bed so that they weren't able to move their arms and their legs around, because they would thrash around a lot. And I think one of the saddest side effects of twilight sleep was often memory loss. So the women had very little, if any, memory of the birth of their babies, which is really sad. So the thing that Fernand Lamaze observed, he was on a sabbatical in Russia around this period, and saw that women were labouring, two things that were very different. One, there were women supporting them in labour, I guess what you might now traditionally call a doula or a birth attendant, so not midwives specifically, and also that these women were labouring clearly without any sort of pharmacological pain relief or anaesthesia. And they were coping really well, and they were using a whole bunch of coping techniques and lots of breathing. And I guess this is where the early Lamaze kind of was known for being kind of a breathing technique or a breathing method. And in some ways that really persists through to today. And I do get people in my childbirth classes say, oh, you know, you're going to teach us how to breathe. And I go, no, you actually do that really well by yourself. So there is still a little bit of a hangover, I think, that people do think of Lamaze as being the sort of the breathing classes. And it's not to say that breathing in labor and having a conscious awareness of your breath to help you manage the discomforts of labor is not a very valuable tool. But I think what Lamaze education, where it has evolved, is to recognize and understand that it's one tool, and there are many things that women will find through the course of their labor that will be helpful for them. And so in any typical Lamaze education class, women and their partners will be introduced to a very wide variety of comfort measures and techniques, and that would include a discussion of more traditional medical forms of pain relief, because it's really important that women don't feel in any way judged for the choices that they make. It's very much about we support informed informed decision making. So as long as a woman feels that she has done her homework and understands the risks and benefits of any given intervention, procedure, etc., and she's come to that decision in discussion with her care team, then that's a decision that she'll feel good about making. So we very much feel that we need to support women in the choices that they make.
If you had to describe Lamaze as an organisation today, what would be the highlights of how it's characterised amongst the other birth technique providers around at the moment?
Well, I think one of the first things that for me, a couple of things that really pop out. One is it's not a method or a technique anymore. It's much more of an approach to safe and healthy pregnancy, birth, and also the early parenting period. So that's certainly one thing that we don't isolate just the labour and birth as this sort of be-all and end-all standalone event, that we recognise, Lamaze recognises that the whole perinatal period, from even preconception, really, if you want to take it right back, through to those early months caring for a newborn and the changes, that dramatic changes in your life, your lifestyle, your relationships with your, you know, with yourself, with your partner, it's arguably the biggest life shift that any of us go through when we become a parent. So Lamaze education really encompasses that whole period. And the other thing as well that I think Lamaze is very proud of is the fact that really the education is completely evidence-based. So it's not theoretical, and it's certainly not, you know, the theory or the opinion of any given, you know, individual educator. Lamaze educators are required to be recertified every 3 years. So it's sort of really incumbent on us to make sure that the information that we're passing on to families is current, that it is the most up-to-date and sort of rigorous research that we have around healthy pregnancy and labour and births. Yeah, I would say certainly the evidence basis and the fact that we're really here to help women to feel empowered. Always very cautious not to say that we empower people, because nobody can, you can't pass empowerment onto another human being, but we can certainly provide tools to women and their families so that they feel that with that information that there is that sense of internal empowerment and confidence. And I think today, in birth today, given that obviously the vast majority of us give birth in a hospital, I'm sure, you know, I know you talk a lot on the show about the sense that birth has become quite medicalised. And I think that's something that it's a given. We do recognise this, and that's not always a bad thing. It has meant that increasingly, I think women need to really be educated to understand that birth education is a really important component of the whole birthing process. And you know that old saying, if you don't know your options, you don't have any. That's kind of my motto. I think for women to make good decisions, you can't make an informed decision fundamentally unless you have that information. And the time to be making these pretty critical decisions, I don't feel, is in the birth room, in the throes of labor. This is something you can do in your pregnancy, when you have the time to be able to attend a class, to read things, to watch things, to really educate and inform yourself, to make good decisions. So
I'd love to know how you got involved with Lamaze in the first place, because as you said, there's not really anybody apart from yourself that's working with Lamaze in Australia.
Correct. So I guess how I came to it, I came to it like I think a lot of people who end up working in this field come to it, and that's from having babies. So I had my two children. I have a son who's about to turn 9 and my daughter who will shortly follow turning 8 a week later. So I have two children just over 12 months, which in itself is another story.
Yeah, that is a bit crazy.
That's another episode. I was living overseas at the time. I actually had been living in Israel for many years and had both of them in Jerusalem. And when I sort of got to a particular point in the pregnancy and I was thinking, oh, you know, maybe I should do a class somewhere, I asked around friends and everybody said the same thing. Oh, you got to go to this fabulous lady in Jerusalem. She's, you know, she's your go-to lady. So we signed up for what I didn't even realize at the time was a Lamaze childbirth class. And really I got so much out of it. My husband got so much out of it. People often then ask me, oh, did you have this incredible birth? And that's pretty subjective. I had a fairly, I would say, difficult birth, but certainly one that it took me in directions I didn't think I would go in. But I think what really, if you like, saved me from having what potentially really could have been quite a difficult and traumatic experience was the fact that we had attended this class. And so all the things that we kind of encountered along the way, yes, they required some careful decision making and some discussion and so forth, but none of it was like a huge shock to my system, and I didn't understand what was going on around me. So that's what really helped my adrenaline levels to kind of you know, stay reasonably settled and for me to be able to make decisions, you know, from a reasonably calm place, which was very, very helpful. So I, you know, personally had a very good experience with Lamaze education and saw how it had benefited me personally. And then really life takes you in some really bizarre directions. And I guess for me, it was one of those aha light bulb moment days. I think I'll look back on forever and go, yes, that was a defining moment. I remember being at home with my two kids. So I had one crawling on the floor. I think one was probably on the boob. I don't know. But I remember just feeling very overwhelmed with the whole parenting thing. And I got an email from the woman whose class we had attended. And lo and behold, she was announcing that she was going to start a Lamaze childbirth educator training program. It was going to be the first of its kind in Israel. It's going to be in English, which was going to be very helpful for me. And was I interested in being part of this sort of pilot cohort? And I mean, my background is not this field at all. I'd come actually from the performing arts and marketing and, you know, thought that's what I would do for the rest of my life. But something about this email and I don't know what it was really, but it was just this kind of like moment. I was like, yes, that's something I want to do. So before I knew it, I was back in the same room I had done my childbirth classes a couple of years later and two children later. And instead it was really in its totally different environment where I wasn't the student, but I was a student, but not as a pregnant woman. I was a student learning to be an educator. And it was just the most incredible learning experience. And I loved every minute of it. My husband and I decided to move back to Australia and shortly after I actually became certified with Lamaze International as an educator. And I just sort of assumed there would be tons of other Lamaze educators. I mean, we number about 2,500 worldwide. So I sort of went on to the international directory and I thought, oh, look up my fellow Australian Lamaze educators, and lo and behold, discovered I was the only one, which was quite a shock. So that was kind of the status quo for the first sort of 2-3 years I was here in Melbourne. And, you know, I was both starting a business as an independent childbirth educator and also battling with the lack of awareness of, you know, what the heck Lamaze was. People knew of other childbirth education programs, but really hadn't heard much about Lamaze. So it was a bit of a challenge in that sense. But then about 3 years ago, Lamaze in the US, it's their head office is based in the States, had approached me and said, was I interested potentially in starting creating a Lamaze educator training program here in Australia? And I remember at the time thinking that was something I would have loved to have done. I thought, oh, you know, maybe 10 years down the track when I feel really experienced and I feel like I've really got something to offer as a trainer. But I felt really kind of at that point, are you sure? Like, am I ready for this? But I saw it as an incredible opportunity for Lamaze to grow in this country. So I really jumped on it. It took a while because once I had sort of done this training of trainers, I suppose, I felt it was really important in developing a training program here for Australian educators that it really reflected the Australian maternity care system. I think one of the perhaps barriers as to why Lamaze hadn't been a big thing here, apart from obviously not having educators available, was I think there's a bit of a perception that Lamaze was very US-centric. And to some degree, that is true. But look, healthy birth is healthy birth. And the message is very universal. So there wasn't much in the sense that needed to be tweaked to make it relevant for not just the educator side, but, you know, obviously pregnant women and their families end of it. But I did want to develop a program that was a little bit more in depth and certainly was reflective of our local system, so that the women, and I've actually had one guy do my training as well, but certainly the students felt that this was a Lamaze for Australia. And that was really important for me from the outset.
How does this American technique translate into an Australian setting for childbirth?
I mean, there were the obvious things that sometimes I think they're minor barriers, but it's amazing how small things can kind of grate and irritate. So there'd be things like spelling and terminology. The fact, I think, also that some of the, you know, the materials and the videos and things like that obviously all featured American people with accents and so forth. So there was that kind of a mental barrier more than anything, because you can swap terminology out and means the same thing, essentially. So there was that sort of superficial level. But obviously, I mean, in Australia, we have a very different model of care to the US. We do have socialized medicine to a large degree, and we all know what a mess the US healthcare system is in. And certainly from a maternity care perspective, it's in really bad shape. So there are some things that we obviously do a lot better here. We primarily have a midwifery model of care, which is a very good thing. But it's not to say we have a perfect system by any stretch of the imagination. And we do have increasingly women taking advantage through their private health care of accessing private maternity care. And again, there's good and bad in everything. And there's great aspects of our public maternity system and there's not such great aspects. And the same can be said of the private system. At the end of the day, what I think it really boils down to is when a woman is choosing, that's obviously to suggest she has choice, because there are some people obviously in Australia who have very limited options when it comes to where they give birth and with whom they give birth, particularly women who are living in rural country areas. But so, you know, certainly for women who are living in large cities, who have the luxury of being able to choose public or private, you know, there is some degree of choice. But, you know, what I find really interesting is, despite the fact that we have this midwifery model, if we look at things like cesarean rates in Australia, we're actually a little bit higher, our cesarean rate, national cesarean rate, than the US. The US is sitting around 32%. Australia's sitting closer to 33%. So it's much of a muchness, but I think it's really interesting. And I'm constantly asking myself, well, why? Why do we have such high levels of, you know, cesarean rates? Our induction rate is on the up and up all the time. And women are experiencing increasingly more and more intervention. And people could argue, there's a million arguments as to why that is. But again, I think, you know, Lamar's education, again, whether you're an American woman or an Australian woman, the fundamentals of the education are really universal, in that it's about really handing that power back to women, making sure that they feel that they're informed, that they have the information that they need, that we know is coming from good, reliable sources, and encouraging them to have those conversations. Because I really think, you know, you look back historically, some of the most important and positive changes in maternity care have not come from the powers that be. They haven't come from our institutions and our politicians. They've come from women demanding better care and improvements. And I think the same thing needs to happen to kind of turn the tide a little bit with what's happening in birth, not just in Australia, but all over the world. So, yeah, that's my two cents.
And I wonder whether one of the barriers that women face is that if you do have private health insurance and you are trying to plan for a birth, number one on your shopping list is possibly the obstetrician, who may not really enjoy working alongside a private birthing consultant. You are in a really tricky situation of being able to provide that amazing care. But I just sort of wonder if there's sort of a lot more work that needs to go on behind the scenes to really help women make a choice.
I agree. I 100% agree. And I think what we need to move away from, which I think unfortunately we've moved too far into this sort of us and them mentality. There's an us and them we've seen for years now, with wars between this sort of obstetric model and the midwifery model. And now doulas are in the mix of this as well. Birth educators are also part of this, if you kind of look at it as concentric circles around the information and the support that a woman receives throughout the course of her pregnancy. But I think there needs to be more talk at the same table, because ultimately we all have the same aim. And that is what, you know, we want women to obviously to be safe, to be healthy, to have healthy babies. I think some of where we differ and some of where I think the contention really lies is our definition of healthy birth varies, because I think sometimes in the more medical definition of, well, all that matters is a live mother and a live baby. But to me, that's a very narrow definition of health. And we only need to look at our skyrocketing rates of perinatal anxiety and depression in this country, particularly birth trauma, the emergence of birth trauma, the fact that we've had to coin terms such as obstetric violence and even obstetric rape. And that is a really worrying development in the maternity landscape. I think that we need to bring more people together to, first of all, focus on what we do share in common, which I think is more than what we don't share in common, and then to have more of a respectful dialogue. And I mean, I know it's easier said than done, but I think that at the end of the day, the people who are losing out are the mothers and the babies, which is sad and ironic given all the work that so many of us are so passionately trying to do and to improve for others.
Wow, taking up that offer really was a life changer for for you, wasn't it?
I don't think I know. Yes, I think looking back, I don't think sitting on my couch that day with my two babies did I ever think that this is how my life would kind of shift. But yeah, it was looking back, I'm glad that it did, because this is just obviously something that I'm extremely passionate about.
The other thing that I was going to ask you is the traditions, that the way that people approach giving birth in different places around the world. And I guess in one sense you're lucky that you've discovered that, because you can tell us what it's like to give birth in Israel. Was that a bit of a worry for you before you went into it?
It was a little bit. I think in the same way that I was very keen to seek out an English language, you know, birth education class. It's not that my Hebrew was non-existent or anything. I mean, my Hebrew is actually quite good. But I think, like, you know, when it comes to pregnancy and birth, the last thing I wanted to be doing in the middle of labor was to be doing sort of simultaneous translation in my brain, you know, and hoping that I'd use the right word and, you know, all the rest of it, and that I would also be able to understand what my care providers was telling me. And I really wanted to overcome that stress. So really one of the first things I did after having done the childbirth class was hire a doula. And to be honest, I didn't even know what the word doula was before I had done the Lamaze class. So I learnt heaps, and we ended up getting a wonderful, wonderful doula. And she actually ended up being we hired her again a year later for my daughter's birth. So, you know, we were like a well-oiled machine by the end of the second one. But having her with us, you know, not just to support me, physical point of view and emotional point of view, but, you know, she was just this fantastic advocate for us, really, in the room. And as I said, I mean, I sort of intimated that my birth was quite complex with my son, and really had the potential to go a little bit pear-shaped. What I do remember, and I think I think pretty much every woman remembers her birth like it was yesterday, or many aspects of it certainly. And I remember that when I went in, I had an induction with my son, and the first midwife that I encountered, who was on shift at the time, was from the north of England, which was really jarring in a sea of Hebrew. Was this really broad, like, yes, you know, strong Northern English accent. And it was just like, I just remember just feeling like I could just calm down instantaneously, because I was like, you understand me. I don't have to translate, all these things. And then as fate would have it, you know, she sort of, when she said goodbye at the end of her shift, she said, I'll be sure to pop in and see you when I come back next, and I'll come and see you and your baby and whatnot. And she came back in on, you know, 2 days later. And of course, I was still in labor 2 days later.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, it started on a Thursday, and my son wasn't born till Saturday morning. Her next shift, she was actually, you know, back into birth suite, and she came into the room and she looked at me and she said, "What the hell are you still doing here?" So, you know, and I was at that point, obviously, you know, 48 hours in, I was just not coping very well by that point.
No surprises.
I do have to say, though, this is, I think, when you're talking about differences in, you know, giving birth in different locations, I truly believe that had I had my children, particularly with my son here in Australia, I absolutely would have had a cesarean section. Just, yes. There's so many factors. It's like I would never have got to that point. And I don't think getting to that point was a bad thing. But I think culturally, I think that if I'd had my kids here, I'm fairly certain I would have had a cesarean with, yes, definitely my son. As often happens, if you had one cesarean, you're probably more likely to have future cesareans. For sure. But in Israel, I think because you have large communities of Orthodox Jewish women, you have obviously Muslim communities, and they traditionally have multiple children, large families. So the birthing culture, the hospital culture, is almost working off an assumption that you're going to have several children. And so there is very strong motivation to ensure that, obviously, all being well and working within safe boundaries, that you avoid cesarean, particularly if it's a first baby.
Because there's a limit to the number of times they can open that section.
Absolutely. With every subsequent cesarean section, you know, you're essentially cutting over the same scar, and the same scar tissue causes exponentially more risk to mother and baby. But certainly for mother's, you know, long-term gynecological health, it's really not ideal to have multiple surgeries.
Although I have to say, sometimes the tradition of having more than 10 babies probably doesn't do it a lot of good either.
No, that's true. Yes, that's true. And your pelvic floor for that matter.
So, not to mention coming up with 10 names.
That's true. We have neighbours across the road from us here in Melbourne, and she has 16 children. I was like, wow.
Wow.
Yeah, 16. Yeah, I don't know how many grandchildren that's going to result in, but
a lot.
Yeah,
it's going to be difficult divvying up grandma's china in that family.
But absolutely.
That would really change the landscape for giving birth, I guess.
It does. So there's a very strong emphasis on let's keep things as normal as possible. And also, interestingly, in Israel, it's completely socialized medicine. So there is no private maternity in existence there. So it doesn't matter if you're the prime minister or whatever. I mean, everybody essentially gets the same care. So there isn't certainly any financial incentive to perform more interventions or more surgery or things that we know there is an association with increased cost and increased financial incentive that we see in more privatized maternity systems. And the US is sadly a very good example of that. So given that there's no incentive for a hospital to prosper because they're doing more, or for an individual practitioner or clinician to do more, when you take those factors away and you are dealing with traditional communities of large families, you create a culture whereby unless something is telling us that this is not normal and this needs intervention, or this needs particularly a more medicalized approach to what's going on, it is otherwise treated as a very normal event. And I think also in Israel, family it's a big thing. It's a very family-friendly country. It's interesting. I hadn't thought so much about it, but I think that culturally and socially, family and children, it's just approached in a very different way.
And so obviously Lamaze is popular in Israel?
I think that certainly amongst English speaking communities, a lot of couples are seeking out private childbirth education. Like Australia, you can do a childbirth class in the hospital. Certainly, I remember at the time the only option to do that would be to do a Hebrew language class, which I probably could have coped with. But again, the same things about classes there that I do here. And again, I'm not going to lump everybody with the same brush, but within hospital childbirth education, it varies enormously. There are some classes which are very good, but I think as a general rule, they're not as in-depth as a private class will be. There is always the risk of some internal bias play with the educator being told what to say or what not to say. Some would argue that hospital classes are really thinly disguised to make you good compliant patients. So they very, very particular about what is included in the curriculum and what is not. Whereas obviously with an independent childbirth class, that educator isn't representing a hospital or an institution. Again, there can be huge variance. You can have great childbirth educators working privately. You can have really bad ones. There's also a very, very large spectrum there. But I think in general, independent educators are able to provide a longer course, much more in depth, lots more opportunity for couples to, do everything from practice comfort measures and active labour positions. Also, the lack of formality, not being in that acute hospital setting, but being in a much more relaxed environment, people do tend to feel more comfortable to ask questions and to have good, rigorous discussion, which again, I think is all a good thing. We want couples to go into birth feeling confident, feeling informed, and feeling that they, have the ability and the skills to be able to ask important questions about their care and not just be taking a back seat and having things done to them, because we know the effect of that long term on women, and it's very disempowering and really can contribute to things like anxiety, depression, birth trauma, etc.
You attended Lamar's conference in the United States just a couple of weeks ago. Tanya, tell me what that was like, and especially as somebody who's coming into that field of childbirth education from outside, what was it like?
It was great. It was also a very special conference for me this time because it was the first conference I attended as a board member of Lamaze International, and they've never had a non-North American on their board of directors. So I see that as a really positive thing. They're obviously really very keen to reach out and expand their reach, seeing it with those eyes as well. The conferences are amazing in the sense that being able to hear from phenomenal speakers, attend workshops, and just as an educator from a professional development point of view is brilliant. I always feel like a little bit of a fly on the wall at those things because obviously I'm not American. I'm not living and working within that maternity care system. And certainly some of the topics which were clearly, I guess, the theme of this year's conference was looking at things like the rising maternal mortality rate in the US. So, in fact, if you are a woman in the US today, and particularly if you are a woman of color in the US today, you are more likely to die around the period of childbirth than you were 20 or 30 years ago,
which sounds nuts.
It is nuts. It is completely nuts. And you think, you know, America spends more on healthcare per capita than any other nation in the world, and yet this is happening. And I think there's a temptation to go, well, that's just America, and you know, we don't have anything to worry about here in Australia because we're doing things so much better. I think that's a bit of a slippery slope. I think in the same sense that we do have a tendency to kind of look to the US for changes and developments in maternity care policy, which has always surprised me. You would assume that Australia would be more closely aligned, say, with New Zealand, first and foremost, given that they have one of the best systems in the world, the UK, other parts of Europe. But for some reason, we seem to ape more often than not what's happening in the US. And I don't necessarily think that's the best way to go. From a population perspective, we're a totally different situation. We have 1/10 of the population of the US. And we also don't have a large African-American population here. But we do have an indigenous community here. And, you know, you only need to look at the statistics, the maternal and neonatal health outcomes of our Aboriginal women and babies, to know that we're really not doing a great job there either. And it might be on a smaller scale, but that doesn't make it any less impactful for the families who are affected by those poor outcomes. So in some ways, I look at and take in this information at the conferences and go, well, you know, here's a bit of where we could be in 10 or 15 or 20 years' time, and let's not do that. Let's find better ways to improve our system here so that it is fair and equitable for all Australians, and that we do a better job of improving health outcomes for some of the people in our community who are faring worse. And that also includes immigrant families who have all sorts of barriers, you know, barriers to language, access to good care, cultural, religious sensitivities and so forth. There's many things which are sort of creating an inequity in maternity care in this country.
And you must really appreciate the difficulties faced by immigrants. I guess in your experience of giving birth overseas, you were facing some of the similar barriers with language and cultural differences.
Definitely. And one of the things I do in my spare time, I also do some work as a birth doula as well. And there's a fantastic organization, not-for-profit in Melbourne called Birth for Humankind. And they provide free doula support for women in need. So they particularly work with women from refugee and asylum seeker backgrounds and young mothers who are often quite unsupported. And so I've been able to give back a little bit and be able to support women who otherwise would have very little, if any, emotional support, who are having their babies here in Australia and facing all sorts of really difficult situations and scenarios, and their backgrounds being very, very complex. Some of them have been in detention and have experienced some really quite stressful situations in their home countries. And so we have it right here, you know, on our doorstep in Australia today. And there are communities out there who are really struggling to be heard. It's wonderful that there are organisations like that doing the kind of work that they do. And I think ultimately with Lamar's education, one of the dreams, if you like, I have is ultimately, and I train childbirth educators, which is fabulous, but increasingly I really want to be able to have women do the training who themselves come from these diverse cultural and linguistic backgrounds. Because ultimately we know that if women are being taught in their own language by women from their communities who are sensitive to the culture and religious needs of those people, that the education is going to be so much more effective and authentic for them. That could be hopefully, potentially, a fantastic way to improve outcomes for these reasonably marginalized communities if they're able to at least to access really good information and education during their pregnancy, together with other things like, you know, improved continuity of care models and so forth, which we know, again, have been proven to improve outcomes for women.
Tanya Strasberg, who's a certified Lamar's childbirth educator, and Tanya also volunteers with Birth for Humankind as a doula.
We did put the question of how useful were childbirth classes to our Baby Talk Facebook group, and we got some really interesting answers. I wonder if these resonate with you. Sue, who gave birth quite a few years ago, said, "What was hilarious to me in retrospect was how everything flew out the window when the actual birth started. I lay on my left side, sucked madly on the nitrous gas, never used the TENS machine or the music, couldn't bear the thought of massage and certainly had no capacity to walk around. But I was well able to recognise the stages of birth from what I'd learned in the classes, and that meant I was able to respond to the obstetrician and midwives with some kind of sense when they either asked me questions or needed me to respond. I had a good first birth, whatever that is. Glad I went to the classes, even though the reality was pretty far from the theory." Another contribution: "I took hypnobirthing classes offered by my local public hospital. The aim was to achieve a natural, drug-free labour and calm birth. The hypnobirthing techniques were useful for the first 14 hours of labour, but didn't prepare me for the complications my baby and I faced. With a baby in distress, I ended up in theatre with an epidural and an instrument delivery. The relaxation techniques and breathing practice did help with early labour though, so I recommend it for that." Leah says she did classes at a private hospital. They were adequate, explained the birth process, but didn't spend much time on what I was meant to be doing. Briefly talked about different pain management, but there wasn't any practicing, nothing about relaxation, how to prepare. I felt underprepared and no one asked what I wanted the experience to be like. I felt like everyone just expected me to be a passive participant. Jan says, "My birthing classes were much about encouraging not to take drugs for pain relief. Lots of examples of other countries who didn't use drugs and all the things that you could use other than drugs. But there was also a couple in the group having twins, and it seemed that the classes went to great effort to explain everything that would go wrong for them. Oh, here's NICU, your babies will probably go there, and you'll probably have to be medically induced, etc. Not the most positive experience on the whole for them." Alicia says, "It helped me to understand the details of how each stage of labour, so it was good for making me feel like it wasn't such a scary thing. Good for my husband too. It gave him an idea of what to expect and the ways he could help. It was also great to see the space in the hospital where I would give birth and also to be able to ask questions about what would and wouldn't be allowed during labour." Alana says, "I was pretty educated on birth as my mum is a doula. I think that's just lucky, Alana. But the courses were definitely helpful in getting my husband on the same page and him feeling more in control." And Vidya said, "I did the classes at private hospital with my first son and I remembered feeling quite unprepared even after the class. I actually found the midwives more beneficial when it came to tips and tricks. In saying that, I'm glad I went to the classes as it gave me the gist of what I was about to embark on, but nothing beats the advice of the midwives on the floor." If you'd like to have a look at those fantastic responses to our question or contribute answers yourself to our podcast, I usually pop up a couple of questions during the week, topics that we're working on or ideas to ask guests as well. So come on over. If you search Baby Talk in Facebook, you should find the Baby Talk podcast page and then send us a request to join the closed Facebook group. It's really interesting and it's a great way to interact with other people who are in the same space. I'm Penny Johnston. I'll see you next time on Baby Talk.
ABC Baby Talk is a weekly podcast on ABC Digital Radio, wherever you get your podcasts and on the ABC Listen app. Like us on Facebook to find out as soon as a new episode is ready. Just search for ABC Baby Talk.